Hello, everyone, and welcome. We are the Godfathers of Podcasting. It's Tuesday, September 27th at 7.02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we are broadcasting live right here on the Godfathers of Podcasting.com. And in case you have not yet been educated, we have been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. As always, archives of this show are available everywhere. Wherever you get podcasts, that's where we are. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, iHeartRadio, we're everywhere. You can listen to us on your favorite smart speaker, in the car. We are literally everywhere. Video archives of this show are only available on our website, because it's not everywhere. It's only on our website, godfatherspodcasting.com. You can interact with us right now because we are live. Send us a text message, or you can get us on WhatsApp. The phone number is up on the screen. 437-375-2000. 437-375-2000. I actually had someone texting last week angry that we weren't reading their text messages. And it was 2 days after we were no longer live. Pay attention, folks. Send us your comments. Send us your thoughts and your feedback, and we will try to get to them tonight if your stuff is good. Hey, everyone, this is episode 111, Make a Wish. My name is Donnie Da Silva, and it is my pleasure to introduce a man that used to be a people person until people ruined it. A man who can never guess, you can never guess what he's about to say because he also doesn't know. Notorious TID, Chris Tidwell.
What is going on, Donnie? How have you been this week? It has been a long week, and you're right. You're right on all of those accounts. I don't know quite what I'm going to say sometimes, so here we go. Nobody knows what I'm going to say. Nobody knows what I'm going to do because I don't even know what the voices in my head tell me to do sometimes. It's crazy.
It's been a good week, man.
Which microphone are you on right now? Do you know? I don't know if you should probably check that out. I sent you a little message. At least check it out. Yeah, I don't know, but maybe it's a thing. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just my headphone.
As I'm on my good mic.
This is the beauty of live.
Yeah, it says live, I'm on my
good mic. All right. Well, there you go. You can hear me? Yeah, we can. Hold on. Crazy times.
Keep talking.
Why? Now I got you thinking? This is the whole thing. Ladies and gentlemen, this is where it goes off the rails.
I don't know.
Donnie's thinking about it. And yeah. Okay. Might just be my headphones.
I think it's your shitty headphones.
It probably is those things. Yeah. Those, you know, shitty JBLs.
Those shitty $400 headphones. Hey, man. They don't make shit like they used to.
They certainly do not.
Busy week, man. I got absolutely spoiled this year for my birthday, which was a great time.
Right. We're on the week after the birthday for you or something, right?
Dude, I celebrated one evening. That's it. The night of my actual birthday. That's it. But
celebrate? What'd you have? What'd you have for dinner?
I went to a nice seafood place, which I picked it because it had really good reviews. And it was one of the rare places I found where I could get really good oysters. But yet for the people that weren't oyster lovers, there was other options on the menu.
Oysters?
They had raspberry points.
Okay. All right. That's a good time of year for them. Yeah, that's good.
Right. So I went there and I'm like,
$2 a piece.
They were three, but I was like, fine. Okay. I don't care. So I'm like, listen, I'll take 50 oysters, you know, let's start her off. And she's like, sounds good. I even called ahead of time and I said, you guys have oysters? Yep. What kind do you have tonight? Raspberry points. Awesome. Put a whole whack of them on ice. I'm coming. So I get there and I order my 50 oysters and she comes back 10 minutes later, 5 minutes later, whatever the hell it was, and says, I have really bad news. Our chef opened the oysters and they're bad. We can't serve them.
What do you mean you opened the oysters?
Like they shucked them. They did the thing
ahead of time.
No, like right there and then.
Oh,
as they were prepping to give them to me.
Where did they get them from? And did they tie off the bag?
I don't know.
Because that does it every time. They killed them. Know. So they had, you had, they had a whole kitchen full of dead oysters. They couldn't even like scrounge up anything else for you.
They had nothing. The whole shipment they said was bad.
Oh, wow. Because
they get them shipped every day, right? And they said the whole shipment was bad.
I might have left.
I thought about it, except everyone I was sitting with, including me, was starving. And I was like, oh,
I would have left them there. They would have been fine. I would have just...
Go celebrate your birthday alone.
100 at a place that has fucking oysters. Because, I mean, realistically, dude, that's what you were going there for, right?
100%. And I told
you. So you didn't get the oysters. Then what did you get?
I got some decent mussels. They did. They specialize in like, you know, like the boils, like.
Yeah.
Mussel boil, shrimp boil, all that kind of shit. So I got a big bag
of Susan Boyle.
What's that? Susan Boyle. She was there. Yeah.
Excellent.
So, you know, it was all right. It was fine. It's just, I really had my heart set on some good raspberry points, but what are you going to do?
Mussels are not the same as oysters.
They're not the same. Hey. They're not the same.
Well, yeah, I found a couple of places out by where I live. So I've got it to where like, I know Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday,
where you can find some
two for ones at different places, but we're talking like Charcoal Steakhouse. We're talking like Cambridge Mill. We're talking like what's this other place called? I forget. There's a couple of other places, right, that I've found that have good oysters, and then they have good deals on certain nights of these oysters, but you can map it out so that pretty much any night other than the weekend, you know what I mean? You can get taken care of pretty
good. I've hit up that steakhouse with you before, and the oysters there were fantastic. So
yeah,
anyway, I gotta get some fresh oysters in me ASAP because I'm long overdue and I didn't get them for my birthday. But other than that, birthday celebrations were dope. OTT last weekend was amazing, so much fun. 6 unbelievable matches. Everyone in the crowd came up to me and told me what a great time they had. So just wanted to share that, and anyone who's tuning in tonight that was at the show, thank you so much for coming. Stay tuned for information on the next one. Tid, anything that you got up to in the last week or so?
No, I was at a very nice Crossfire event out in the falls on the weekend as well. Another packed house by Chris LaPlante, doing a fantastic thing out there. So, yeah, and you know, we got some I got some dates that we're getting to, and going to be wrapping some stuff up, and you know, who knows what the next check is going to bring. So.
Have you officially started?
Nope.
I think you might have. Have you officially started celebrating the Halloween season yet?
No, because here's the thing. I'm not going to be here. I thought about that the other day, right? And I was going to set up, because we have some big-ass dope fucking decorations and shit like that, right? That we got from, like, when we closed down that part of the tattoo shop in Toronto. So we some big-ass hanging cool stuff. And I was like, you know what? This year we're going to set all this stuff up outside, because we usually don't, because I don't have I don't live around a lot of people, and we don't have a lot of kids on the street. I'm flying out. I'm going to be gone. I'm going home.
You're going to Vegas?
Yeah, I'm going to Vegas for Halloween this year, brother.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, did you get your vacation approved by HR?
The singer of Bad Brains. Yeah, he's cool with it. And or do you mean HR Puffin stuff? Yeah, he's cool with it too. If you mean HR at my place, that's me. So I'm cool with it too.
All right, right on. How long are you going for?
Just Kelly's going down for like 4 days. Yeah. I'm gonna stay at the Bellagio for 4 days.
Oh, and then look at you.
I'm gonna go it's a whale deal. It's a free room whale deal. So it's all right. And then I'm going to stay down for an extra couple of days to like do some family stuff. So I'm going to be down there for about a week or so.
Find the cop that hassled you when you were a teenager, beat the shit out of him.
That guy is probably dead by now. I would imagine.
Rest in peace.
Or not. I don't give a fuck. Like, yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. It's always fun. And Halloween in Vegas is dope.
I mean, let's face it. The basement of your house is essentially Halloween all year round.
Yeah. My one room is set up with all of my, horror movie stuff and shit like that. So it's pretty cool. But no, I was gonna do something this year out front, and then all of a sudden we had booked the trip, and so screw it. Because there's a lot of places we might try to see. I don't know. I haven't looked it up yet. I'm sure that Vegas has some of those things. These what are they? These haunted mansions and these theme parks. You know what they can go to.
Right.
They're a big thing in the States. Up here in Canada, I don't find them to be that big of a deal, but in the States, fucking crazy. Have you ever gone to these things?
Yeah, I mean, they have them here, but I remember back in the day, man, like going to even things like Screamers and stuff like that, and walking around and people would jump out at you from the dark and put hands on you, and that just makes you want to cock one back and knock a dude out. Now they're a little more like, don't touch anybody, which is good for their own safety and their own health.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know that I've been to one of the haunted house theme parks the way you're describing, though.
Well, have you heard of these things? There's a couple of them, but there's this one. I think it might have been a couple of years ago or recently. I can't remember, but they offer you $20,000 or some bullshit like that if you can make it through this 10 hours of haunted house. You know what I mean? You're basically walking into some dude's personal S&M torture chamber, in my opinion.
Oh, no, thank you.
What I mean? They put you, tie you up and put you in deprivation chambers.
No, they don't.
Poor shit. This is the thing. And you think about it, is this dude just I don't know, trying to get off on his own fantasies of fucking beating people? Because who's made the 10 hours? Have you, know what I mean?
He's the next Jeffrey Dahmer. That's who that is.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Have you watched any of that yet?
I have not. I'm waiting for the right time. And by right time, I mean broad daylight, when I have
Sunday afternoon.
Yes. Yeah. Sunday afternoon, when I've come back from church for the first time in years. And I have many people around me, so I don't get too scared.
You know, it's funny because you say that, because I haven't watched any of it either. Just schedule permitting, but I have talked to some people that have watched it, and all of them have said the same thing. I wish I would have watched that at a different time, because they all watched it before they went to bed. And it was one of the most fucked up sleeps I've ever had. And I'm like, well, I ain't doing that.
And you just looked at me sideways when I said, I'm waiting for the right time. This is exactly what I'm saying.
That's why. It's because the right time is 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
99% of my TV watching is before I go to bed. So there's no chance I'm watching that shit. Right,
no, this before. Is going to be one of those. This is going to be one of those days off. You know what I mean? When you wake up and you're just a long weekend, Monday or something like that, and you just kind of wake up and say, "All right, what am I going to binge today?"
Right.
And it just happens to be this. And hopefully, it's a sunny day, because I don't even think you want it to be overcast. You want no darkness whatsoever.
to play Resident Karen for a second, is there anything wrong with having this Dahmer film and shining a light on this guy? Does it glorify or glamorize him in any way, shape, or form? Does it make him a celebrity when so many people tuning in have either forgotten about or never heard of Jeffrey Dahmer because it was so long ago?
Well, spoiler alert, he's dead.
Thanks. But it still puts thoughts in the minds of other psychopaths out there that, hey, I could become a famous guy if I follow my dreams and become a psycho that eats people.
I think I'm 50-50 on this one, to be honest with you, Donnie.
Okay.
And because, yes, the humanitarian and the inside of me is like, well, there shouldn't, you know what I mean? Obviously,
you ate a humanitarian?
More. Yeah, the whole thing.
That's why they're inside of you.
You don't want to see people fucking getting murdered and shot down, and we all seen enough tragedy and blah, blah, blah. But let's face it. When was the last time there was one of these, the serial killer movement? When was the last time there was one of these? You know what I mean? Like, it's been a few years. So, yeah, if we can get another, like, I mean, Son of Sam, Ted Bundy.
The school shootings and,
you know, no. Else. Those are different. That's completely different type of killing. That's a mass killing, and it's a bad thing. But I'm talking a guy who hunts down victim after victim after victim after victim over a long period of time. That's what these guys, you know what I mean? And this was all days before radios and tracking and being able to look up with things on the computer. And
the ice truck killer, the Trinity killer.
That's not I don't understand if you understand things. But yes, this is what I'm talking about. When could we have another ice truck killer out there?
Don't tell me Dexter's not real life.
Maybe one day it is. So if that's not real life, how is this movie about Jeffrey Dahmer real life?
I don't know. I'm 50-50 on it as well. Yeah. To some extent, I think maybe it's a cautionary tale, but I haven't seen the subject matter, so I don't know how it's presented. I just, there's a part of me inside that turns and goes, do we need a show? Do we need a movie about these guys? I don't know.
Let me know what you think after you watch it.
Can we watch it together?
Absolutely. Okay. Let's fucking Netflix and chill to some Jeffrey Dahmer shit. That is a safe date right there, boy.
Oh, God. I think I'd rather sleep with Ted than watch Jeffrey Dahmer. Speaking of someone who sleeps around, Celtics head coach, Ime Udoka.
Somebody who sleeps with Ted. I was like, whoa, hold on a second here.
He may have. He's been with everyone else. Ime Udoka, the head coach, the rookie head coach of the Boston Celtics, right, that took them to the NBA finals last season in his first year as an NBA head coach, a man who has been engaged to actress Nia Long for the last 7 years. First of all, let's just talk about that. A 7-year engagement, it's probably time to break up.
Bro, and if you're trying to get across like I haven't found the right time or the right ring yet, you know, the season's always there and I'm always blah blah. No, bro.
There's no 7-year engagement that's not bullshit.
No.
That's bullshit, especially when they're both like super fucking rich. There's no financial constraints. There's nothing holding you back. You got nothing but time and opportunity. No. 7-year engagement, I call bullshit.
Dude, Nick Cannon would have had like 13 kids with that girl by now.
And 9 other wives.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he gets to work. What is this dude doing?
So Ime Udoka, while engaged to Ms. Long, is believed to have had multiple affairs with members of the Boston Celtics office. One of which, and by the way, none of the women have actually been confirmed, have had their identities confirmed yet by the organization. Okay. Celtics president Brad Stevens is livid at all of the Twitter speculation that's been going on, with people posting photos of female staff members saying, well, it could be her, and like ruining those people's lives. Like, that's fucked up shit. But at the same time, the Celtics are the ones that put this story out with no information, so they have some culpability as well. That all being said, one of the rumored people, and this comes from somewhat credible sources, is the wife of a senior vice president within the Celtics organization. So literally, he was sleeping with one of his boss's wives. Another one. Well,
so
is,
it wasn't Larry Bird.
No. Larry doesn't work for the Celts. Another one was an assistant. It's rumored to have been an assistant who booked all of Udoka's travel, as well as the travel of his fiance, Ms. Long.
Okay.
So, I'll just put that bitch over here, and then I know where Ime's going to be, and I'm going to be there too.
Yeah, like, here's the it takes two in that situation. Everybody's got to remember, right? So if it's the wife of a senior VP or anything like that, like, bro, don't get butthurt because brother's got better game than you do.
Yeah,
like, but she needs to have some accountability for all of this too, right?
Where in the world can you sleep with your boss's wife and keep your job? Come on. Come on. Unless you're working in porn, where can you pull that off? Like pretty much nowhere.
Chick-fil-A.
And so the Celtics put this story out there. They did not terminate the contract of Ime Udoka. Initially, when this story broke late last week, they said that they were going to suspend him potentially for 20 games. Then the talk went to 30 games. Then the talk went to as much as three quarters of the season. And then the announcement came out on the weekend that he would be suspended for the entire 2022-2023 season. I'm going to tell you guys right now, he will never coach for the Celtics again, ever. And I'll go a step further. He may never coach in the NBA again. You don't just go and allegedly sleep with your boss's wife and then get another job. That's just not going to happen. But, you know, I think the thing here, Tid, that bothers me the most about this whole story is Celtics president Brad Stevens wants to act annoyed with the Twitterverse and wants to act annoyed with social media and people that are making speculative comments about, well, okay, who was it? But they leaked the story and they didn't terminate the guy. If you're going to leak the story and suspend, not fire, you got to give people the information. Otherwise, keep that shit in house and don't tell anyone.
Do you think they leaked the story so that they could put it out there in front of the court of public opinion to see what that gauge is and then go from there?
Maybe, but you're also dealing with women's lives that have nothing to do with this shit. So if that's their
exactly
idea to put this in the court of public opinion, it was a bad idea.
Does she work for the office?
Who?
Like, does the VP's wife work for the office?
Yeah.
Maybe that was a bad idea then.
In other basketball related relationship news, check this one out. Ooh. Larsa Pippen, the ex-wife of Chicago Bulls legend Scottie Pippen, is allegedly romantically involved with Jordan. No, not Michael. Michael's son, Marcus Jordan.
Oh. It's going to be Michael B. Jordan.
No, not Michael B. Jordan. Marcus B. getting Scottie's ex.
All right.
And you know somewhere, Michael Jordan is like, walking in Larsa Pippen's bedroom, starting at forward. That's my boy, sticking it to Scottie's lady, Marcus Jordan.
And then you know he just walked.
No, that's going on in Michael's head. The most competitive bastard on earth. He's like, fuck,
well, what it was, Scottie. What it was,
said,
as soon as
you said LeBron was better than me, fuck you.
As soon as Scottie and his wife, as soon as Pippen and his wife got into that first beef, you know that Michael's son was just sitting there one day and he looked at his dad and he goes, and that's when I took it personally.
I find the whole thing so crazy, bro.
Wow.
And like, honestly speaking, you know, this is something Michael would have done himself if he wasn't in a very monogamous relationship after Scottie talked shit publicly and said, oh, I'm not convinced that that Michael is better than better than LeBron James. Like, you know, that pissed off Michael. He's still the most competitive guy on earth.
Yeah, he took it personally.
He took it personally. He sent Marcus out on a mission. Hey, Larsa is fine as hell. Go close exactly that deal for me.
That's amazing.
I don't know, man. For those of you that are wondering, Larsa Pippen, 48 years of age, and looks great, by the way. And Marcus Jordan is a ripe young 31.
Yeah.
So good for her, man. But hey, good for him.
Right? And Scottie Pippen walking around looking like Shock G with the glasses and nose bit on. So
does bro code apply to your son with your ex-teammate? Is there bro code there?
Nah.
What?
Let the young bull go.
So hold on. If one day in the future, my 10-year-old son grows up and he's like 20 years old and your wife smartens up and leaves you, it's okay if my son hooks up with your wife?
100% his problem.
You don't believe that for 2 seconds.
No, I do. Because you also got to remember that for every action, there's a reaction. So if Pippin, so if Scotty,
I don't even want you to finish that sentence.
If Scotty lets this whole thing slide, then, you know, that's on him.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying I would.
Yeah, I know. Before we get to our guest, I want to share this very quickly. Take a look at this. This comes to us from somewhere in Illinois. This is a 10-mile long corn maze done in Illinois to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the James Bond film, the very first James Bond film. This carving in a corn maze 10 miles long features Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, Sean Connery, Daniel Craig, and Pierce Brosnan, all the Bonds. Dude, I couldn't draw this on paper, and some guy carved this with a lawnmower through corn across the span of 10 miles. What the hell? I don't even believe a guy did this. This is proof UFOs are real. Look at this.
Yeah, this is a long-standing thing that I thought when you put this thing up on the screen, I'll be honest with you, I thought that it's like, this is the stupidest looking money I've ever seen in my entire life. But no, this is like some aerial shot from like 450 feet up or something like that. Now that the queen is dead,
this is the new $20 bill in Canada.
Right. And you know what's weird? I just saw some news story as well. That car, that original gimmick has gone up on the auction block now as well.
Oh, the Austin
all
Martin?
Of this stuff. Yeah. And they're looking, I think they were saying it's going to fetch somewhere between like 4 and 5 million pounds
for a car.
Yeah. For that particular, like the car with the headlights that go down and the machine guns that come out the front of it, like the actual original Bond car. So that's, I don't give a fuck who you are, because it doesn't work. It's not street legal. All you're doing is putting it up on blocks inside of your house instead of a fucking piano. Like, that's for some rich people that just got nothing better to do. So, and that ain't me.
God, speaking of ridiculously priced cars, since you just said that, and I don't want to go into this right now because I do want to get to our guest. Have you heard of the Rezvani tank?
I'm sorry?
The Rezvani tank. It's a residential vehicle. Like, it's a street legal vehicle that is military grade in every way possible. This thing is so fun. You got to Google it. Everyone out there, go Google the Rezvani tank. It is so sick. It's like if a Hummer fucked a Jeep and had a baby, it would be this, right? Or a Hummer and a tank and a Jeep had a three-way and out came this thing. And it has electrified door handles. It has blinding lights that literally, like, it'll blind a person. It can shoot smoke screens.
Does it have a switchblade that comes out the bottom if somebody tries to steal it?
That's the upgrade. Like,
it has flamethrowers.
Bro, this thing is, and it's like $3.5 million for the base model.
Well, what's the stereo like?
It's got two big woofers.
It's just got a couple of like stock Samsungs or something in it. just 2 6x9s in the back window. That's it.
It's the sickest. Just go look up the Rezvani tank and see all the ridiculous features. You're going to wish that you had ridiculous money and could pull this thing off. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time right now for the big hello. And this week's guest was introduced to reality TV fans about 3 months ago as a cast member of the latest season of Big Brother. She was personally introduced to us last month when Joseph Pooch Poocharelli was on this show. She wrote in to say she loved the show, and we made sure to book her on as soon as we could. She was evicted from Big Brother this season in week 4, so she lasted longer than Poochie Maine, but she was definitely my sentimental favorite. Her backstory resonated with me, and despite the fact that I wasn't a fan of what some of her friends were saying in the house. I felt like she was pretty damn authentic. She showed up on Sunday's finale looking very glam and cheering for the woman who would be crowned queen. Outside of the BB world, she currently works as a chef to some serious high rollers. And prior to that, she was a cop, which we heard very little about on the TV show. So I'm planning to dig. Ladies and gentlemen, in her alliance, she was a main cog, but she got misted up like Giesling's fog. Outside the house, she probably likes to jog. She's a damn fine chef, can cook a whole hog. Now give it up to our friend, Nicole Leog.
Hi, guys.
Tremendous. What's up, girl?
What up?
How are you?
Good. Well, it's nice to meet you.
How are you doing? You as well. Thank you very much for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
How is California still treating you right now?
It's pretty amazing. It's surreal. And in obviously now that all the house guests are out and I get to kind of mend some fences and make sure that we're kind of all on some sort of a same page, but you know, we're all going through our own paths of healing and figuring out what real life really is.
And I think that's the thing, right? Like, people talk about mending fences after being on any reality show, but Big Brother in particular, because that's what we're talking about right now. But I mean, I think people sometimes lose sight of the fact that you're playing a game.
Yeah.
Like, this is a game. Like, if I played checkers with Tid, I'd punch him in the dick just so I could, like, jump a piece.
That is a really weird move.
Yeah, and today, you know, we were using the same analogy earlier that, you know, it's a game when it comes down to it. When I quadruple jumped you in checkers,
right,
to beat you. And
I've never pulled off the quadruple jump. I'm very envious.
I did it to Terrence right before I got evicted. So it was my shining moment. And then, you know, and then even Terrence, he brings up a good point. And he says, you know, when I used four draw fours on you playing Uno, and you know, obviously we're talking about something very, you can't compare Uno and checkers to the game, sure, of Big Brother, but let's be real. We all want to win. We all want to figure out the best way that we can get to the end. And that's what we were doing.
And that's really what it all comes down to. I'm curious. I know that, first of all, thank you for joining us, because I'm sure that you've been partying your ass off since finale night on Sunday. Yes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Get the fuck out of here.
Voice, because I was, you know, doing some public speaking, and so I sound a little hoarse because of that. So yeah,
Poochie Mane already gave me the dirt. Don't worry, I know.
Yeah, karaoke bars do not qualify as public speaking either. Okay.
I know you guys have been having a good time and living it up as well. You should. Y'all deserve to. What I also know though is the Big Brother alumni is a very tight-knit family, right? There's only so many people on the planet that know what that experience is like. Has anyone from past seasons of the show reached out to you and said, girl, I know what you're dealing with and I got your back if you need anything?
Absolutely. And you know, for the grace of what they're trying to do, you know, I would love to name drop, but you know, I've been given some love from season 23. I've been given some love from season 20. I've been given some love from my favorite season of 16. So, you know, it's amazing.
Was that Christmas?
No.
Who was 16? Who's on 16?
Nunya.
Oh. None your damn business.
Yep. Yep.
This is why Tid and I are going to be sharing.
Absolutely.
No, and you know what? The thing is, you guys know that I do lead a very private life, especially Donnie. Oh. Had some pretty amazing conversations, and that's one of the reasons why I even said, yes, absolutely, I would do this interview. But I've been shown some grace, and I've been given a lot of lessons, and I've learned a lot in the last month. And I will say that I'm happy that I did it. I'm happy that I am receiving the support that I'm receiving. But until you live in that house and until you are there, you really don't know what any of us are going through.
Yeah. Because
we're talking 16 individuals, 16 people who have never met each other before are experiencing something in their own way, and they're going to figure out how to heal from all that in their own way. They're going to figure out what path and what journey they're going to take once they leave the house. And, you know, we're human. Like, we were all there for the same reason. Maybe some of us weren't there for those reasons, but as far as I was concerned, I felt like everybody was there to win $750,000. And in the end, only one person wins that money.
So, you've been a fan of the show a long time, like me.
Yeah.
I've watched the show since it started, the American version, and I've often thought to myself, especially when Big Brother Canada started, you know, casting, I thought, man, that'd be fun. Maybe I should jump in on that. And then it's like, my paranoia would make me insane in the first week. I know that I'd go crazy. Having watched as many episodes as you have, did you ever say to yourself, you know, I'm a private person, this shit's going to drive me crazy, maybe this isn't for me?
I feel like I'm still stuck in Big Brother After Dark. So I didn't realize what 24-hour feeds really looked like.
Right.
You know, I know there was a lot of feed cuts. I know that there's a lot of things that people say that they saw, but there's a lot of things that people did not see. Right. If I would have done my research a little bit more, maybe my mouth wouldn't have gotten me in as much trouble as it did. But, you know, I have no regrets. I mean, I said what I said, and I don't apologize for who I am as a person. I apologize for hurting those people that it affected. And that's real. I mean, I never felt that I would walk in that house thinking I could possibly hurt somebody in a malicious way, and with the words that came out of my mouth, those weren't my intention.
Yeah,
but I think that's kind of one of the things just about being a human, right? Is like, you don't have a script on what you're going to do in your life for these X amount of weeks that you're filming this show. Like, you're going into this completely blind like everybody else. So you might say something that might hurt somebody's feelings during that time. And the beautiful thing about being a conscious human about this is that you can go, you know what? I don't regret what I said to anybody, but listen, let's now have a conversation about this, about what I said. And maybe it just came across wrong. Interpretation, you know, a lot of things can get killed that way, but this is, I mean, you wouldn't say it if you didn't have a firm stance at that time. That
right.
Doesn't mean it can't change. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's just part of being a human, I think.
You're living in a house 24/7. You have cameras and mics on you. You don't have any outlets. You're playing survivor. Like, you're playing survivor in a house. You're not able to walk away, technically. You're literally living in a bubble, and you're trying to do the best that you can to survive in this game to win $750,000. And when it comes to strategy, and when it comes to alliances, you're going to do whatever it takes to keep those people safe, the people who you are aligned with safe. And I was making decisions based on the people that I was working with. And, you know, I got a lot of slack for saying that so-and-so's judgment clouded my own. But guess what? So-and-so, whether we say Daniel from the Rograts or we say Monty, Michael, Kyle, Amira, and Alyssa from Pose Pack, I'm protecting my alliance. I'm protecting my path in this game and my journey in this game. And so I was making decisions based on that. And then, we're human.
Yeah.
We get protective over people. If they're frustrated with somebody, now that person is frustrating us. And, you know, we want to stand up for them. We want to defend them. And then in turn, it turns out that we're defending ourselves, and we're trying to figure out how do we play this game the best that we know to make sure we get to the end. I wasn't trying to make it to jury. I was trying to win $750,000.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people out there who are not happy with the way I played the game, but I know in my heart that I played to the best of my ability with what I was handed.
I can totally relate. Just last month on Facebook, Tid knows this, I put a post where I talked about how I've been guilty of this throughout my life. And I'm not playing a game on a TV show. I've been guilty of being that person who one of my friends says something about someone. And because I'm fiercely loyal to that friend, it's like, all right, I am down with you and whatever you say, I am not down with that person anymore. And then I find out that the person I'm friends with and that person, they've kissed and made up, but I'm still mad because I've been mad and now I can't fix the wall.
You've created your own situation by doing
I created my
person.
Own situation and, right? And it was out of this for me. I'm not speaking for you, Nicole, but for me it was out of this false sense of loyalty. It was out of this false sense of like protecting my people, right? And so I can understand that feeling, and I know that if I was on the show I would do the exact same thing. So I fully relate to where you're coming from.
It's part of tribalism.
Protective instincts, and for me, yeah. I protect those who are closest to me. And if they are threatened by somebody, when you're playing the game of Big Brother, if the people in your alliance are threatened by an individual or an alliance or other individual, like, you're going to do whatever you need to do to get that person out, right? And that's what happened.
There was something I noticed on this season of Big Brother that I don't know that I've seen to this extent in the past. You and Michael, for example, oh my God, now his name just slipped my mind. Matt,
use your words.
Turner. Thank you.
Matt Turner. Yes.
Turner. I was like blanking on Turner. I'm looking at his face and I'm blanking on him. You, Turner, and Michael, you know, all members of the LGBTQ community, but it was never something that had a light shone on it. It was like, these are just people. It wasn't really, you know what I mean? Like in the past, it was almost like we had our token gay person on the cast because we're supposed to, and they were playing up a lot of stereotypes and that sort of thing. And that wasn't really the case with any of you. Were you aware of that, or did you see how you were all carrying yourselves, portraying yourselves, how the show was showcasing you? Do you see that it felt or appeared different than it has in years past?
You know, I guess I'm trying to really figure out what you're trying to ask, because as individuals, between myself, Taylor, and Michael, we are three different, extremely different people. We live our lives completely different from one another, even though we are technically from the same community.
Right.
And so I know for me, I was trying to do the best that I could to represent my culture of my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I know that Michael was doing the same thing, and I know that Turner was doing the same thing, but that's just who we are as individuals.
Right.
When it comes to banding together and sticking together and trying to figure that out, I think because you have three different personalities and you have three different people from the same culture of individuals, we were just trying to figure out how to survive the best way we knew how in that game. And, you know, just because we came from the same background of LGBTQ, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to work well together, but that's...
No, for sure. I guess really what I'm saying is it's nice to see that casting has evolved. Like last year was the first time we had more than the one or two token Black members of the cast. And then they decided to jump on board and say, you know what? We're going to make this special.
Yeah.
And now, you know, in the past, it was always there was one or two token gay members of the cast.
Yeah.
And, you know, that very much was a part of their presentation, to the point where sometimes they would try and do like a gay showmance on the show. Like maybe these two will like each other and something. Right. Right? Well, and it just seemed like it's normalized to a point on the show now where they're not making it that's a talking point of your on-air personality. It's just, you're just another person on the show. And it's not a big thing. And I think that that's a nice, refreshing way to look at the cast.
It is, and it's nice to know that, you know, with my lifestyle, it's not taboo anymore, and that I
right.
can
yeah. talk about
the fact that I love women and that I've been married and now divorced, and you know, I'm
your words.
I mean, she just threw that shit at me. So.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was saying.
I feel like I just, that whole statement alone, it's just very loaded because, you know,
right. I get it.
It's from the LGBT community. On top of the fact that I'm half Latina, half Asian.
Right.
You know, I've had many situations where I've walked in a room and I'm the only one of my kind. And so being able to finally walk into this room of 15 other individuals who signed up for the same fucked up reality for however many days we were all in the house for, you know, it's so comforting and it's so nice. And so being LGBTQ and then also being Latina, also being Asian, you're talking about so many different things that I'm going to have to try to familiarize myself with all these other house guests.
Right. And
I will say that because of Big Brother 23 and because of the cookout, mm-hmm. I felt very comfortable applying for the show. This is the first time I've ever applied for Big Brother. And so
I love that. I love that.
That process and really seeing a side of myself that I was like, whoa, like what's going on? And then obviously seeing a side of myself that I'm now learning from after being in that house for 30 days, it's eye-opening and it's life-changing. I mean, we're talking about one of the most historic seasons in Big Brother history.
100%.
We're talking Big Brother Canada. We're talking Big Brother Brazil, yeah. Big Brother Philippines. We're, you know, this is just one of those seasons where you cannot compare them to every other season. You cannot compare it to a season where something as monumental as the cookout occurred. You know, everybody's individual, everybody's different, and everything is going to happen the way that it happens, and the cards are going to fall the way they fall.
Nicole, we just had a text message come in from a audience member, 4373752000. They want to ask, hi, Nicole. I loved you on the show. I'm curious to know what is in slop. How bad was it? And I saw on the show that you were mixing slop with other things using your culinary ability. Is that even allowed? If you're being punished and you're on slop, aren't you supposed to eat that shit straight up?
So yes, you're supposed to eat that shit straight up. You're able to fortify it with other vitamins and other minerals. And so the main base of slop is steel cut oats. And
oh, that's not so bad.
Basically boil it the way you would oatmeal. And then you can add in proteins, pea proteins, whey protein. But there's a list. So you have a list of things you're allowed to eat and a list of things that you're not allowed to touch. And some of the things you're allowed to touch are salsa, which I found a salsa that had black beans and corn in it. So that was implemented into my slop. And then pickles. I don't understand. I don't make these rules. And then you're allowed to also have like protein shakes. So you can have alternative milks and regular milk and regular dairy or whatever. So you're able to kind of make things in your own little concoction. But I started making things into meals because as a chef and as somebody who hates to eat the same thing over and over and over again.
Right.
I got creative. And so one of the days I made matzo ball soup. Another day we were making like pancakes when Turner was on slop, when him and Jasmine were on slop, he made French toast sticks that were actually pretty fire. you try to get as much creative as you can because you're trying to figure out how do I fill my body and like, how do I eat and stay, you know, have energy and all that stuff. So
I'm a little crestfallen right now, Nicole, because in all the years of watching Big Brother and all the Big Brother house guests I've interviewed, I've never thought to ask what's in slop. So thanks to that person in the audience. the way people react, I thought it was like puke. People react like it's just steel. I eat steel cut oats anyway.
That like for the first set of house guests who go on slop, it's already made for them. So they're literally opening a container of,
and it's cold,
made cold slop that actually has the protein, the pea protein. Like it smells like you okay. left a shaker bottle in the car for like
it's nothing worse.
All right. I got you now.
And it's
since we're on the topic of food here, because I have to ask, because you are a chef, you are trained, you have some on your Instagram, the stuff is like beautiful looking, you know what I mean? Because you have like my two favorite culinary, like international foods, that's you, like Mexican and Asian. What's your favorite thing to cook?
Well, I'm Puerto Rican, not Mexican, Ted.
Okay, Latino, sorry.
Okay, there you go. winning. Say that again.
What is your favorite stuff to cook?
In my moment. My favorite cuisine, actually, I mean, I have an Italian uncle and he's from Brooklyn and I am through and through a Sicilian Italian girl in my blood, even though it's not in my blood. And I love making pasta. It's my forte.
See, I was right. You are Mexican.
Don't fuck with Tid.
Because that is some straight up, like, Mexicans love pasta. I don't understand it, right? 100%.
They do. No, pasta is my specialty. You know, working in yachting for the last going on 4 years, you kind of have to have your hand in everything. And so for me, it's about just giving what the guest wants. And when you're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for being on a yacht for 7 days, you're going to do whatever it is their little heart's desire.
That's a nice transition, because we just had another text message, 437-375-2000. Hi, Nicole. I loved you on Big Brother. Since you are also a yacht chef, any chance you will appear on the show Below Deck?
I mean, I wouldn't say no if I was asked, but
that show's crazy popular. That
show is a little bit too crazy for me. I feel like there's a little bit too much drama behind the scenes and on scene. And, you know, for me, I just want to focus on food. I'm not one to get involved in all that drama. But
the crazy thing with that show is it's putting yourself out there for no payoff. Like, there's no prize money. It's not a game.
Like, there's no incentive. Like, I feel like there's no incentive that comes along with Below Deck. Right. Somebody criticizing your food, which, you know, being on Big Brother, there's been some pretty horrible and harsh things that have been said about my cooking. And I'm like, whatever. I really don't give a shit.
You've watched Below Deck, obviously, right?
I've watched a couple seasons, yeah.
How much do you relate, or how much do you connect with some of those chefs that get absolutely butchered by impossible clients?
It's every charter.
Yeah.
I mean, not every charter. That's sounding a little horrible that these people are very pretentious and, you know, they want what they want. But you have to remember, these people are paying very good money to have a private chef on a yacht that they're paying, you know, over $100,000 for a 7-day trip. And, you know, you need to be on at the top of your game every single time. And I've been fired once. In the beginning of my career, I was fired because I wasn't up to par. And, you know, I didn't have the right demi-glaze on their steak. Well, go fuck yourselves. Like, I really like, but, you know, it's just, they're paying big money. And if you want to get that nice tip at the end, you're going to do whatever you can to give them a 5-star meal. So it's,
the craziest shit I saw was on Below Deck. There was this couple that came on with all their friends, this woman who was, I think, in her 40s, you know, and she had just before the yachting trip, just before their little vacay, she broke her jaw and it was wired shut. So her instructions to the chef were all of her meals were to be blended so she could have them through a straw. So she didn't want smoothies. She wanted what everyone else was having. So you're having fucking steak tartare and something else. Blend that shit up. And then she would send it back and be like, it tastes weird. Yeah, because it's a fucking steak smoothie. What the fuck?
That's where I walked off. That's where I leave. I mean.
Yeah. Now you know why she got her jaw broke.
Yeah.
Hey, there was- right? It-
Do a little people's elbow right on it. Like
there you go. Atta girl.
That's right.
I want to know. Okay, so first of all, going back to Big Brother for a second.
Yes.
Right at the end of your stay in the show, you sort of sensed what was happening. You read the tea leaves. You kind of felt what was turning, what was going in, and you realized, ah, shit, I might be on my way out the door. And then you dropped your secret on a few of the ladies.
I did.
And you said, hey, look, I'm a cop. Keep me here. I will protect you.
Yes.
I mean, first of all, was that the ultimate act of desperation that you decided to drop your secret? Yeah.
Are you kidding me? The moment Amira went home,
right. I was
like, how do I save myself? Because
right.
I knew that everything that Amira was telling me wasn't the truth, or not even that it wasn't the truth, but Amira was just like me. She was trying to survive. So she was doing whatever she needed to do for her gameplay. And so when it came to me, once she was voted out and that blind side happened, I was like, oh, it's on. Like I have to figure this out. Because when you think long term, I knew that me being Taylor's festy bestie, that now I am her pawn. I knew that I was the next threat. So I knew that if at any point in time I was still festy besties with Taylor, I was going to be the one going home. So now I'm trying to think of how am I going to stay home? Like, how am I going to stay without getting voted and going home? And the best way I knew how to do that was putting all my cards out on the table, and specifically to Jasmine. So Jasmine's sister is an ex-cop. And I thought telling Jasmine that her sister and I already had in common that we were both part of the LGBT community. And mm-hmm. So I thought for sure that, like, okay, this is going to solidify it. Jasmine is pretty much the big sister of Indy and Alyssa. Here we go. Like, I'm going to say this, they're going to have a side conversation. You know, I was hoping that it would just carry me a little bit further, and it didn't.
Do you think that it didn't work the way you wanted because it was a last minute thing and it was when you were in danger and you didn't share it sooner? Or do you think they didn't believe you? Or do you think at that point it just didn't matter?
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
The leftovers were already formed.
Yeah. And,
you know, I was given hints.
Yeah.
About it. And, you know, I was specifically told by Michael, if he's like, I was having a bad day. And he basically said to me, you know, I keep forgetting to tell myself that if I'm coming into this house and I'm not part of an alliance of seven or eight people, that that alliance already exists. And so right. He was dropping hints hardcore without throwing his alliance under the bus. And so I picked up on it, but I wasn't doubling down in my brain about it. And so when I couldn't figure out who the seventh person of that alliance was, I didn't know if it was I didn't know if it was Jasmine or Kyle. Mm-hmm. I knew my number, all the numbers were against me. It didn't play in my favor.
Here in the Toronto area, the greater Toronto area, it's pretty rare that you meet a cop or you meet someone that says, I used to be a cop. Most people in this area, if they become a cop, that's what they do till they retire, because cops in this province make a really good wage. They do really, really well. In the US, you hear all the time about people that used to be cops and then said, fuck it, you don't make enough money for the risk you take and the job and everything else. So they go find something else to do. What was your experience on the force?
I mean, I was making pretty good money. I definitely was doing well for myself as a single person. Halfway through my career, I met my ex-wife. And during that time, you know, she was one of those people who was a pusher of dreams and following your passion. And I decided to go to culinary school while I was a cop. And I fell in love with it so much so that we decided that we were going to move ourselves from Florida to Colorado, and it's all history from there. I started out as a dishwasher at Whole Foods, working as a butcher and working in restaurants as a prep cook. And then while I was doing all of that, I realized, like, wow, I really do have a talent for this. And I fell in love with it even more. And here we are. And so,
and it's a lot safer than not getting shot at for a fucking living.
Well, you know, I mean, that's on a different scale too. Like, so for me, it was more of what is going to make my mental health and make me happier. The tactical side of everything and the actual job itself, I mean, throw me anywhere. You know, I loved all of it. I loved my job. I loved anything that had to do with, you know, especially where I was going on my path in my career. So crimes against children, internet crimes against children, child predators. So I was going down the path of, you know, real fucking criminals, like people who are violating children and violating, you know, just people who needed to go away. And
real bad people.
Real bad people. And so that was passion, and that's where I wanted my career to go. But during that time of training and all the things that went along with it, politics and, you know, bullshit and racism and so much that was going on that people hated us. I mean, you couldn't even walk up to someone's house without someone saying, like, fuck the police. Like, we're, you know, and that's years, that's 10 years of just like stuff, like piling on. And it got to the point where I was just like, how can I make my life better? How can I make my wife happy? How can I make my marriage survive and do all these things to kind of put myself in a better position for a better life? And I realized that carrying a gun and a badge and wearing a bulletproof vest just wasn't it. And, you know, I loved my career. I feel like I was very successful in the 10 years that I was a cop, and the last 2 years of my career, I was a detective. But, you know, I'm happier today than I've ever been in my life. And I get to do something that I love every day, and I get to travel and not have somebody shooting at my head and not have, it's kind of funny. You know, there's a lot of haters out there, and there's a lot of people who are very critical about who I am as a person because they saw me on national TV. And, you know, a lot of those hate messages that I receive are based off of, you probably were a dirty cop. You probably were fucked up. You probably were the person who was doing this and that. And it's like,
people are the worst.
I have like all the integrity in the world that it just breaks my heart, because I know that the job that I did for 10 years, nobody can ever take that away from me. Sure. So when it comes to a lot of that chatter and a lot of those tweeters who want to talk shit on my name and talk shit on my career, it's sometimes hard to swallow, because
I know Nicole was not a dirty cop. She's such a fucking goody two-shoes. She's the first former Big Brother guest in the history of this show that went and asked permission to come on the show. She's such a goody-goody. And she's like, I really want to do the show, but I'm a rule follower. And I'm like, yeah, you are. There's no way this woman was a dirty cop. Sorry, Tid.
Nicole, here's the one thing that you always have to remember. All of those people that talk shit online all are part of that same community. They're all part of that same social media community. And that community, it's not fucking real. That's the real thing. When you leave, you can put your computer down and none of that shit exists in your real life. And you go back to sitting on $1 million fucking boat, right? Making some great fucking food and seeing the world and being happy as shit, showing off that smile. Because all of that other bullshit is just that. It's just bullshit, right? Yeah.
We got a couple text messages here I want to get to before we run out of time. This one is, hey guys, I'm loving this interview. Nicole, the guys have interviewed the original Latin King of comedy, Joey Medina, several times, and he's also a former cop, and he's told some hilarious stories about his days wearing a badge. When you think about the funniest shit you ever saw while you were a police officer, what immediately comes to mind?
Oh, man. So Listen, it's been a while. I left in 2014.
Right.
And because I am a goody two shoe, I can't share a lot of
that. Okay.
Wow. This seems like a lead. Like your life just seems like one big fucking lead up to a book, Nicole. That you're just trying to sell it on all these stories. Like, no, I can't tell you now, but wait, for a certain price in 3 years, I'm going to have this product out.
You know, I say that with a lot of grace because
absolutely.
I've worked with some pretty fucked up people and I have seen a lot of shit. And, you know, let's go back to what I was just saying a moment ago about what my training all was in. And that has a lot to do with child predators and crimes against children. And so a lot of people would always ask me, like, what's the craziest shit you've ever been in? What's the craziest shit that you've done? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know what? Putting real criminals behind bars to me, you know, is not the same viewpoint for
other. Correct. It's not even the same as being like a beat cop where you're correct. Walking around and you see some like some dude talking to the wall. You know what I mean? Like just some funny weird shit. But yes, like you're going after like you are on a fucking tunnel vision mission on a manhunt for actual bad people, not just on patrol.
Right.
So and to I'm speak. You know what I mean?
Thing is like you know, that's where my career was going. And, you know, there was one period of time in my career that I was detached to those units for a short period of time. But yes. So if we're going to talk about the craziest shit that's ever happened or the funniest shit that's ever happened, yes, people talk to walls. People talk to the air. People are, you know, I had a guy who for years, you know, in the state of Florida, we have to, Baker Act people and what you're able to check them in to be basically supervised and for a 48 hour 72 hour period where, you know, they're checking to make sure that their mental status is okay. If, you know, whatever, there's this one particular guy that I would pull up and he's jumping in front of public school buses, public buses, the whole nine. I would pull up and I'm 5'6 3/4, 5'7" on a wet day. Like this guy, I literally would just unlock my back doors and I would have him crawl inside the car and then I would have like my backup come and like search him or whatever. Because what am I going to do with a 6'3" guy? Like there's no way in hell, like I'm going to be, you know, going head toe to toe with that guy, you know? And anyway, so this is the most boring story ever, but the point I'm trying to make is that yes, there were all those sorts of people that, you know, you could tell these stories for days, but because of the person I am a goody goody. I'm not one to ever talk shit on anybody. And you know,
it's okay. We love that about you. Look, there's a funny two-part question here that came in, and I love this. This is from Bart the Fart, and it says...
That's your real name.
Two-part question. Nicole versus Tid in two different events. Nicole, it's a tequila drink-off to the death. Pick your poison. What tequila do you pick? Tid... A twist on Last One Laughing. You have to cook something for Nicole to get her to audibly make a reaction. What do you cook?
All right. I'll go first on this one to give you some time to think about that because tequila is very important. And I guess
if she's able to eat it without making a or ooh or kind of you lose. So you have to.
Yeah. So like I've got a couple of dishes obviously that are like, they're in my back pocket that I, you know what I mean? I can whip out and they're always a hit and stuff like that. But I make this one dish. It's a chile relleno casserole that I make. See, there it is right there.
She already jumped.
Boom. Boom.
That's not fair. Although I am like chile rellenos are like, I lived in Colorado for 6 years. So for me, sorry, I'm looking for my phone charger. Rellenos for me are literally like, I lived in Colorado and it's just, that's fire. So
yeah. So it's super simple. So it's literally it's an egg and flour mixture, and then your cheese, and then just layer, just like throw it in the oven. Yeah, I'll send over the deets for you. It's delicious. It is fantastic. You'll love it.
I love it. And what was the first half of that question?
The first half of the question is, you're in a tequila drink off with Tid to the death. Ugh. What tequila are you choosing? So whoever drops first dies, I guess.
Oh, well.
I don't know if I like that.
We've been hitting it pretty hard since Thursday before. I've been hitting it hard since Thursday. But the finale, me and either Casamigos Reposado or Herradura Reposado on the rocks with some orange and a little dash of cinnamon. Like, I'll take a whole bottle on Tid.
All right. Somebody's getting dunked on when we see each other in Toronto. I'll tell you that.
Fucking drinking, this is the drinking best that death match ever.
Right? I didn't know we were drinking. I didn't know we were drinking, you know, bar rail stuff.
Oh.
I'm kidding.
Can we move on to wrestling trivia?
I heard you're a bit of a football fan, actually.
I am a football fan, and I'm a very proud football fan. Week three.
What's your team?
I say week three because it's going to be week leading up to week four and five. So I'm from New Jersey, and I'm a huge New York Giants fan. But
You suck.
But wait, because I've lived in Florida, I'm going to just put the icing on the cake. Because I've grown up in Florida and I'm a huge lover of where I'm raised, is that I'm a huge Miami Dolphins fan as well. So
now they've got a good team this year, though.
We just beat the Bills. We beat the Ravens. Like, I'm all about this whole trio of Waddle and Tua and Tyreek Hill. Like, let's go. Like, let's go. Let's bring it. Let's figure it out. And the Giants, of course, they come out of nowhere. And I'm like, oh, right, I like you guys too. So it's just, you know.
Yeah, but they couldn't even beat the fucking Cowboys yesterday. So, like, I mean, come on. Everybody knows who's going to win that division. It's my beloved, exalted, wonderful, loving Philadelphia Eagles. The rest of y'all in that division can, like, suck an egg, right? And that's cool.
Eagles can go as far as they want, but they're never going to make the playoffs and they're never going to go to the Super Bowl.
Ooh.
Wow. Ooh. All right. There's the bet. Let's see who goes further, Miami or Philadelphia.
Well,
oh,
I just want to see you get past the Buffalo Bills.
So do I.
That's where
I don't think we've got them this entire season.
That's where I stand, because for me, I'm a huge Dolphins fan. Oh my God. I can't believe I just said that by accident. I'm a huge Dolphins fan and a Giants fan. But let's talk about the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen, and let's talk about.
They should be winning the entire thing.
Let's talk about Von Miller and how he has literally already represented that team to the fullest. Yeah. And so let's go. Let's go.
He turned everybody into a pass rusher on that team.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. It's been the greatest. Like, they really needed that piece. And by all rights, Buffalo Bills should be going all the way. The reason that they lost to the Miami Dolphins was because of poor time management on that clock for that last play. But I mean, you know, listen, you should have put more points on the board ahead of time. Then you don't have to worry about it. It's like leaving it up to the judges in a fight. You just don't do that, right? And Miami's strong, man. Miami has got a strong team.
They haven't been strong for a very long time. And you know, I love our new coach and I think that he's doing great things, but let's talk about Tua. You know, he's one of the most underrated quarterbacks right now.
Yeah.
And I see him, you know, I see him up there, but I mean, I go as far back. I mean, God, let's go far back as Dan Marino. We're talking, we haven't seen something like this in a very long time.
Last time they were good.
Sure. Well, but that was also, you got to remember, there was also 4 years with Marino that they were shit.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So like it happens, right? So I'm excited for these young quarterbacks like Ty, like Jalen Hurts, both coming from the same background in school. Like yeah. it's a crazy football season. Everything that you thought was going to happen isn't happening. Upsets galore this past week. Like I love it. Football is the shit.
I'm down for all of it. When I look at Tua and I see the way he plays, I think of Donovan McNabb. And like, it's one of those, he's one of those quarterbacks who's just going to keep getting better and better and better. I mean, okay, first quarter, we're looking at any given Sunday. He's kind of like throwing up on the sidelines. And then we're talking quarter two, halftime, three and four. Yeah. Let's go. Like he's killing it. I think that he's going to just demolish everybody.
In case you're wondering, Nicole, why I'm so silent during this part of the conversation, my team is 1-2. So I have no shit to talk right now. I'm just
who's your
very
team?
49ers. He's a
who's
Niners.
Who's a 49ers
boy.
Fan?
Yeah. A bunch of 80-year-old men. That's who the 49ers
fan. I'm not 80 yet. 79. Thank you. As of last week.
Old men.
As long
shaking
as you have a couple of years, I don't care about anything else.
Right.
Tremendous. Listen, at least I'm not. Whoa, we just lost her.
Wow, she just Irish goodbye to everybody. She was like, fuck your Niners.
She's like,
I'm
49ers,
out of here.
Peace. Wow. I have a feeling her phone must have died because she
was
absolutely for that charger. It's all good. Nicole Leong is an absolute gem. She mentioned to us, Tid, off the air that she, despite growing up in Florida, originally from the New Jersey area, the tri-state area, she does have a ton of family up here in the greater Toronto area. She's planning to make a trip up here and she wants to do a big old cook-off with the Godfathers of Podcasting, which I think would be a hell of a lot of fun. Throw on a football game and let's make a day of it.
Absolutely. Let's get it done.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's very rare that we wrap a show without actually saying goodbye to the guest, but we are over time and this is what happens. So
I think I like her better for that. I think that is the most fucking dope thing you could do to us. That
she's
is
like,
great.
She's like, before these assholes ask me about what after party I'm hitting up tonight, I'm just going to peace.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck these guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode 111 in the book. Speaking of cooking, next week on the show, we are going to have a connoisseur of my people's cuisine, a man who specializes in teaching you how to cook Portuguese style. You can look him up on TikTok and Instagram, how to cook stuff. He is hilarious. He's a lot of fun. We're going to be chatting with him next week on the program. He's actually in Portugal right now, I guess, picking up supplies or doing whatever he's doing. And then he'll be back at his place also in Florida. And we'll catch up with him next week. That'll be a lot of fun. So, Carish de Carayu, stay tuned for that. It's coming up in 1 week's time on behalf of the notorious TID, Chris Tidwell. My name is Donnie Da Silva. This is episode 111. All right, hold the phone. I know we said we were done, but this is like Godfathers After Dark because we're doing a little bit of bonus right here because
now if only Big Brother would do Big Brother After Dark instead of the 24/7 feeds that don't really go on 24/7.
As much as Tid was impressed with Nicole's Irish goodbye, she did come back moments after the show ended. And you know what? I'm glad she did because I did have something burning. I was dying to ask her. I had it sort of in the back of my head that I wanted it to be the way we wrapped up this interview. We tried to get Tid back on, but he's already knee deep in some sausage. So take that how you will. Tid was thrilled to have a fellow hardcore football head on the show. And he said, come back anytime, Nicole. But I needed to ask you this.
Okay.
I watched the finale, the Big Brother 24 finale on Sunday. And first of all, you looked like $10 million. Okay. Let's just put that out there. You looked like $10 million.
Thank you.
So whoever your stylist was, I need that person. Secondly,
Jade Sky out of Charlotte, North Carolina. She's a boss. She used to be a makeup artist for Lady Gaga. And she just so happened to land herself in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Yeah, the moment I put on that leather mono, I realized if everyone's going to call me a villain of this season, I might as well embrace my inner Cruella de Vil. Even though I saw a few tweets that said I was a dominatrix who was going on a job interview.
Wow.
Wow, I'll take it. I still don't get it, but I will take it. I'll take it.
I'm pretty sure Jade Sky is also the name, and I'm not making a joke. I'm being dead serious. It's also the name of a retired porn star here in Toronto. I'm not kidding.
Listen, Marissa is definitely not a porn star.
Okay.
But very similar makeup artist who has now dove into styling, and her clothes are amazing. She has, everything is one of a kind, and so it's amazing.
That's awesome. So when I watched the finale, I was anxious to see, you know, what my pal Nicole would have to say on TV, and they didn't give you any mic time, which I wasn't thrilled about. I know that they can't necessarily talk to all of the evicted house guests. I get it. But, you know, I thought it would have been a cool move to give you a little bit of opportunity to speak. They chose not to go that route for whatever reason, but really compelling TV. After the votes were revealed and Taylor won the whole kit and caboodle, everybody is out on the stage. There's confetti, there's music, it's all happening. It's the moment that everyone's been waiting for all season long. House guests are seeing each other again for the first time in however long it's been for them. And everyone is doing what they always do. They're hug, smile, I miss you. Go on to the next person. Hug, smile, I miss you. You and Taylor found each other and had a really long embrace. And then you kind of pulled away and the camera showed that you were saying something to her and she was smiling and nodding the whole time. And the camera never pulled away. And you sort of at one point backed away, but still holding her hands tightly, you know, like the way you would, like with a loved one, you know, someone that you're very connected to. And you said something and her face just had love in her eyes. Like, honestly, and I was like, normally I don't watch this part of the show. I'm like, okay, I get it. She won. What's happening on TV? What, like, what's the score in the football game? But I couldn't look away. What the hell did you two say to each other?
Well, you know, a lot of people have their own interpretation of how I left that house. And, you know, my story is my story. Taylor's story is hers. And, you know, there was a lot of chatter about the conversations that her and I had before I was evicted. Mm-hmm. And I apologized to her in the house. And, you know, when we were sitting in those nomination chairs prior to my eviction, you know, there were a few things that I had said to her in regards to her time in the house. And I said, you keep fighting. Take that big threat out. Do not let a man win this game. And when I saw her on finale night, when she won everything, when we hugged, we both said, I love you. I missed you. I told her that I was proud of her. Honestly, a lot of adrenaline and everything that was going through my veins. I really don't remember exactly what I said to her, but, you know, I told her that I was proud of her. I told her that I loved her. I told her that she did the damn thing. Like, she did exactly what she was supposed to do and she won. And, you know, a lot of people don't hear every single conversation inside the Big Brother house. And we're talking now, what, day two out of being, you know, post finale. And I've apologized to her and we've had some conversations, but when it comes down to it, what happened on finale night was honoring her in that moment of what she was able to do. And she did the damn thing. She won Big Brother. And, you know, we did our victory dance and we had our embrace. And it was
beautiful. It was beautiful.
And I didn't know about this, you know, obviously, like, I don't know who's watching, who's not doing anything. Like, we're not privy to any of that, but sure. I don't give a shit. I don't care. I don't care what people think. I know who I am. And I know that there are things that I've said about Taylor that I will be apologizing for a very long time, and I'm going to make up for that. But at the same time, like, this is a fucking game. Big Brother is a game.
Exactly. People need to calm themselves. You know what? To anyone out there that watched this season and has shit on this person that is on the screen with me right now and has tweeted horrible things or sent horrible things, and all of it centered around this thought that she may have spoken poorly to Taylor or treated Taylor badly for any particular reason, all you have to do is watch the last few moments of that finale and look at the way that Nicole and Taylor connected. That is 100% authentic. And if you look at that and think that Taylor has any problem whatsoever with Nicole, you're insane. You don't understand how to read people. Like, I'm watching that and I'm like, these two look like BFFs. They look like they're going to go out and, you know, paint the town red together tonight. Like, I was so heartwarmed by that moment. And it was a beautiful, authentic moment. And it just, I think it speaks to your character. And I think it speaks to how sincere a person you really are. And I feel terrible that you've had to deal with so much shit. And you know what? I'm sorry for that.
I appreciate you. And I get it. I get we're under this microscope, this social experiment, and people are going to have their opinions. And the people who have been through that house are going to have their opinions. And when it comes down to it, like, there's a lot of repair that is going to happen, and I hope that it happens. And, you know, it's all going to happen in due time. It's going to happen on a schedule of what's going to be okay with Taylor. And she has a lot to digest. She has a lot to work through. But I will say this, that I'm here for conversations to happen and whatever works best for her. And quite honestly, whatever works best for me, you know, we're both going through our own path of healing. Yes, she won. She fucking won. Like, bravo. Like, Taylor is the winner of Big Brother 24. Like, whether you like it or not, she has a lot of people out there supporting her. And I'm very proud of her. And in that same breath, she is also on this journey of figuring out her own shit. And I'm on this journey of figuring out my own shit, all 16 of us. And so it was, you know, it was a pretty epic season. It just has its own moments. And so, you know, I appreciate you for listening and really, like, you and Tid for hearing me out and understanding, or at least understand where I come from. But everything surrounding me and Taylor's situation is me and Taylor's situation, and whatever she needs to do and whatever is best for her, that's what she's going to do. And I'm here to go down that path with her. And I'm here to make sure that she understands that I'm here for whatever healing needs to happen. And, you know, it's all about repair, and I want to make sure that we can do that, whether it's together or separately. Whatever the scenario is, I'm all about it.
The biggest problem with a show like Big Brother is the rabid fan base is convinced that what they see is a totality, is that is the totality of who you are. Right. They just, and then they make connections in their head. They do a hop, skip, and a jump to, well, if I saw this person do this, then X, Y, and Z, they must also be this, this, and this. And those things just do not add up. That is not the way it goes. And people tend to forget it is a game.
Yeah.
You know, and the same people that were hating on the way you were communicating with Taylor allegedly are the same people who 2 weeks ago were like, oh, now Taylor's sleeping in Monty's bed to try and get votes. I hate her. Like the same voices, you know? And it's like, oh my God, they're playing a game. They've been living in the same house for 3 months. Leave them alone, you know? And I'm like, I can't even wrap my head around some of the toxic people in the audience. It just blows my mind, but I get it. And I love the fact that you handle it with grace and class. And I know that it's been difficult, but you have the internal strength to rise above, and you're better than that. And it was so obvious to me that you and Taylor are in a good place. It's so obvious to me. So
saying that, you know, I hope that her and I continue to be in a good place. And, you know, just like any, I mean, let's call it a controversy if we want to, you know, I don't really understand. And I don't really know any other word that we could use in this moment, but, you know, it's all going to be about figuring out that path of healing and figuring out that path of repair, because it's just like, you know, we are officially mourning our experience. So as a human, we're going to go through highs and lows. We're going to be laughing. We're going to be crying. We're going to be excited. We're going to be angry. You know, there's going to be very, very intense moments. And I hope that myself and Taylor, along with the 14 other house guests who all walked in that house on night one, that we're all able to figure out and navigate how we're going to be okay.
I'm going to throw this out there too, just as a nice feel good moment, because I was really blown away by this. I don't know how much of finale you got to see because you're at the studio. Did you guys have a feed of everything that was happening, or how did that work before you walked out on stage? What's that?
We didn't see anything.
Okay, whatever. Yeah, you saw everything. So I think Taylor, and maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, so hold on. Wait, I'm going to, before you continue, we did not get to see her and Monty's final speeches.
Okay. Okay, so I texted you and I said, holy shit, Taylor with the epic speech.
And I was part, and then I'm like,
So you need to watch it.
Okay,
because that might be the best final two speech I've ever seen. I have a feeling there were people that were leaning towards Monty. They heard that speech and said, I can't not vote for Taylor. She literally said to the jury, I challenge you to avoid the typical habit of voting for the person that dominates competitions and dominates in games, and look at the person who was resilient, the person who survived the block five times, the person who made connections, the person who cares, and the first Black woman to be in this position. Like, she couldn't lose. The speech was so good. And I'm like, oh, Monty, you done fucked up. You chose the wrong person, my man. Holy shit. She brought it.
He chose the wrong person. I mean, we watched up until right before they gave their speeches for votes, and before the jury asked their questions. And I will say that Monty, hey, you know what? Taylor won. She did everything she needed to do to get to the end, and she won. That she deserves it. But if Monty wanted to win, he should have taken Turner.
I would love to do an informal Q&A with all those jury members, you know, privately, off air, and just say, okay, level with me. Were you thinking Monty, and then you heard that speech? Because I'll bet you there's at least a couple. I'll bet you there's at least a few, because that speech was fire. I was like, holy shit. And the best part was she snaked him before.
That true answer. I don't think you and I will ever know.
I know. And she snaked him before when he was trying to decide who to take. And she says, hey, Monty, you pick me. It's an easy win for you. And then she came with the right cross.
Hey, you know what? She's made for this. This is her.
Oh, my God.
Her time. And
so good.
And I said it today. I will say it over and over again. I was having a conversation earlier. I'm like, she was made for this. This is her time. This is her moment. And Taylor is going to soar, and she's going to slay, and she's going to kill it. And you know what? She got me out of the house. The leftovers got me out of the house.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't just a big move by let's just say Monty being HOH the week of my eviction. That was a big move by the leftovers. And, 100%. You know, that's where we are. So here we are. And honestly, I'm happy that, listen, I wanted to win this game. I wanted to go far in this game. I wanted to go for that 750. But with all of the things that have gone on in my life in the last 30 days, 40 days, however many days it's been, I'm happy that I was able to be home to go to my best friend's wedding. I'm happy that I was able to be home to be with my mom. I'm happy that I was able to be home with my niece and my nephews. And I've done a lot of reflection. I've done a lot of self-care, and I have learned a lot of lessons from being in that Big Brother house. And I've learned a lot about myself. And regardless of age, life experience, when you're in that Big Brother house, it's the true test of self-care, self-love, and self-awareness.
Well, listen, I'm so glad that we had this opportunity to connect. You are absolutely one of my favorite people to ever be on that show. I'm so glad that we've had the opportunity to get to know each other over the last little while. You know that you've got tons of family in Toronto, and you've got one more Big Brother over here. So, you know, got your back, and we are definitely going to have that cookout with you and me and Tid. We're going to have a big old football frenzy, barbecue style, mow down and do the damn thing. You know, we're going to make that happen. And I know somewhere close by is Sweet Tea. So give him my what up, please. When
I will for sure. And I will make sure that, you know, all the love is being thrown your way as well.
Thank you. And by the way, I just looked it up.
And I can't wait to talk to him and see him again.
For sure. And I just looked it up. The Dolphins are plus 1800 to win the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's not great odds, but if you want to make a little money, you can throw it down now.
I mean, if we want to talk about last season, we won't even do that. Okay. Let's just go with that.
And Rihanna's going to be at the Super Bowl. So, I mean, like, you get Riri and the Dolphins. Yeah. That would be perfect, right?
We're winning on all fronts. It's good.
Nicole, thanks so much. I really appreciate your time. And and you know what? It was cool of you to come back on when your phone crapped out. And I'm glad that we got a chance to put that part of the story out there for everyone so that they got to hear it from your own lips.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Donnie.
And now this is really the end of 111. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
All right then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.